Thanks, Shane. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Wash your hands.
Good afternoon on this Tuesday afternoon. How are you? 51551 for your texts. You can send us email to ray@rte.ie, or you can write us a letter or send us a postcard to The Ray Darcy Show, RTE Donnybrook Dublin 4. We got a letter from Sean. I was going to say O'Sheen. It's Sean. Sean Quish. And Sean lives in Old Town in Hospital in County Limerick. And the reason I'm going straight to Sean's letter is that he's a huge fan of Eileen Dunn. I should have said it to her before she left. Also a huge fan of Shane McGowan. Sean's problem is that he knows what Eileen Dunn looks like because, you know, he sees her on the news, but he doesn't know what Shane McGowan looks like. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to get a picture of Shane McGowan, our Shane McGowan, not, you know, the Pogue Shane McGowan, and send it on down to Old Town in Hospital to Sean Quish. And thanks so much for your letter, Sean. And keep listening and mind yourself. And Breda has been on. She got one of the free on post postcards and put it in the post and said lovely things. So thanks very much for that, Breda. In Galway, you're very good. Richard has been on to ray@rte.ie. On Thursday or Friday, in the piece about the love letters, in the background, you played an instrumental of Carole King's You've Got a Friend. We did indeed. As Jacqueline Anderson read out the letters, the love letters that her mother Liz sent to her dad Brian, and her dad Brian sent to her mother Liz. Anyway, yeah, You've Got a Friend. There it is. Richard C-Y-G-E. Richard. So it's Richard C-Y-G-E. I don't know how you pronounce that. Kyg, is it? If you're looking for that. It's nice. It's nice. It sounds like something you'd hear in the background in a restaurant. You might look around and there could be a person playing the guitar doing it, or it could be coming through the PA system. Anna's been on about a song as well. Listen to the show whenever I can. Oh, thank you very much. Anyway, on Friday 12th, heartwarming story from Jacqueline Anderson. Well done, she said to Jacqueline and her mum and dad. What I want to know is, at one part of the show, you played bits of songs. You played snippets of certain songs, and one in particular stood out. But for the life of me, I can't place it. Well, actually, Anna says, for the breath of me. I've never heard that expression before, for the breath of me. It was a guy singing, "Can you please put me out of my confusion and let me know?" Well, I'm thinking we played a number of songs. It could have been this. Randy Travis and Forever and Ever Amen. It could have been that. No?
You may think that I'm talking foolish.
And then we did sort of people's suggestions for the best Irish love song of all time. And we play this.
Who puts the rainbow in the sky? Who lights the stars at night?
And that's by Declan O'Rourke and Galileo. See, I assume that everybody knows that song because it's been around for so long. It's been played so often and it's so brilliant. But, you know, somebody like Anna Brady just mightn't be on her radar. So Galileo, Declan O'Rourke.
Someone like you and made them all.
And over the weekend I was playing Spotify as I was cooking away and doing other things, and a number of songs came up on playlists, and I thought, oh, we forgot about that Irish love song, and we forgot about that Irish love song. So I have one there ready to go, which I'm going to play for you, which we should have remembered on Friday in the lead up to Valentine's Day, but we didn't. We didn't. Now, that was Valentine's Day. Today is Shrove Tuesday, Pancake Tuesday, flipping and topping and all sorts of things. We did it this morning, made the batter and made the pancakes. There was one with melted chocolate on it, and then there's one with the traditional sugar and a squeeze of lemon juice. That went down well, and there's still batter there. So this evening, after dinner, I'm going to have... there's going to be raspberries, there's going to be fresh cream, and there's going to be melted dark chocolate. That's going to be my little treat. And we have Kevin Dundon on after 4 o'clock, and he's going to be suggesting toppings and flipping and all that sort of thing. If you've any suggestions, get them into us. I'm looking at, in all the papers, of course, it's covered. There's a 2-page spread in The Guardian today, and our own Richard Corrigan has a lovely suggestion, which I may try. He says you can slice an eating apple and coat it with sugar, then cook it in butter until it starts to caramelise before adding a ladle of pancake batter. Sprinkle cinnamon and sugar on top. Flip it or grill it, and you have the most delicious little apple pancake in the world. Now, has anybody ever tried that before? Sheila, no? No, Niamh? That sounds delicious. An apple pancake. And then there's your man from The Fat Duck, Heston Blumenthal. So he makes bacon-infused maple syrup. Yeah, that's what he does. Yeah, if you're really posh. So you preheat the oven, you put in your smoked streaky bacon on a tray, and you cook them, obviously. And then you roughly chop the bacon and put it into your small bowl or jar with maple syrup. And you let it infuse for an hour. Then you take the bacon out and you use the maple syrup with the bacon flavour to put over your pancakes. That's an idea. The ESRI, you think I'm going to get serious now? No. The ESRI have put up a map of the world and how different countries cook their pancakes and what they're called. So there you go. I thought they'd be doing serious things about Brexit or the economic effect of the pandemic on the world economy. But no, the Economic, Social and Research Institute have put up a map of the world's pancake making. I'm just looking at it there. So in Finland, they do panukaku. Say it fast with confidence. So they bake their pancakes in the oven. They're created by pouring pancake batter into a dish and letting the oven work its magic. Popular toppings include jam, fresh fruits, cream and powdered sugar. Nothing new there. In Denmark, Eppelskivers. It sounds like something from Roald Dahl thing, isn't it? The little Eppelskivers. Anyway, Danish pancakes are called Eppelskivers. They're circular and it says spherical here in shape. There's a difference between having a circular thing and something that's spherical, as in a ball. Anyway, they're filled with anything from jam to Nutella. And then there's a lot of savoury ones as well. China, for example, have a thing called Kong Yung Bing. It's a savoury pan-fried pancake and it's a dough rather than a batter. And you put minced scallions into it. In Ethiopia, injera is a spongy fermented pancake. It's similar to bread and is often eaten as the base of the dish with other ingredients added on top. So whatever way you do yours, let us know. Let us know how you're going to cook your pancake today. The email was busy overnight as well. We did the emails there, yeah. I better tell you about this. It's our quiz of today. Today being the 16th of February, we've cobbled together 10 questions on events that happened on this day over the years. News events, scientific breakthroughs, movies, TV shows, births, deaths and songs. All in there. And we have 5 questions each for 2 people who will come on after 4 o'clock to take part in our quiz of today. And we have a prize. This week comes from the I Knew A Collection. Each day this week, a lucky listener will win a 2-night break and dinner in any of their 4-star hotels. And they have them all over the country. You might kick back in Kilkenny's chic Hibernian Hotel, spend some downtime in Dundalk's Fairways, taste the magic in the 4-star Tullamore Court Hotel in Hillgrove, Monaghan, or any of the Radisson Blue Hotels in Athlone, Cork, Limerick and Sligo. And to book a summer break, eyes on summer with iNewA Collection, iNewA.ie. So, to qualify, here's our qualifying question. In which Irish province would you find the county of Fermanagh? In which Irish province would you find the county of Fermanagh? 1850 715 100... Let's start again. 1850 715 900. 1850 715 900. And we may be talking to you after 4 o'clock. And good luck with that. It's very springy, isn't it? It's very springy. Lovely, mild weather. Sun is shining, sky is blue. And immediately when you say that, you've hexed it. And it's probably started raining in the west already. I do apologise. I remember your lovely dad coming on with his pancake recipe every Pancake Tuesday for years, Polly in Wexford. Yeah. It was a tradition. It was the only time my dad and I spoke. that's a bit of a joke. A bit close to the truth. Anyway, no, we did. We did speak. Of course we did. But he came on the radio for years and years and shared with us his pancake recipe. It was the same every year and we did it, but it was one of those lovely traditions and it's something that I miss. And thanks for remembering that, Polly. And this is the song that I was listening to over the weekend that I thought, we should have mentioned that on Friday. The great Finbar Fury and The Last Great Love Song. Good afternoon. Isn't that great? The Last Great Love Song, Finbar Fury. And that came out of that RTE programme called The Hit, where it was all about the songwriting. And people went and pitched their songs to various people like Finbar Fury and they decided which song they were going to sing. And I think that won it back in 2013 and it became a hit for Finbar and it was number one, I think. The first number one for him in a long time, over 20 years. But it's a lovely song. And every time it comes up on Spotify in the playlist, it stops me in my tracks. And hopefully it did the same for you today. Now, let's see what you're saying. Can you and your listeners settle something? We call it Nutella. Others call it Nutell. Big debate in our house. No, it's Nutella because there's nuts in it. There's no newts in it. There's nuts in it. That's why it's called Nutella. I would think. I don't know. Lynn says, you mentioned that music is something you might hear in a restaurant. Can you remind me what a restaurant is, please? Says Lynn. Well, you remember those nights? If you had kids of a certain age, you'd be booking the babysitter for a few days in advance if you could get one, and then you'd be wondering what you were going to wear. And when it came to the day, you'd probably ease off on eating, so you'd have a good old appetite for when you went out, if you were lucky enough to be able to go to a restaurant. And then you'd book the taxi because you'd want to have a few drinks, and you'd probably go to a pub nearby to have just one pint. You don't want to drink too much because that'd spoil your appetite as well. And then you're getting all excited, and you've probably been to the restaurant before, so you know what you're going to have. You know that it's going to be your favourite, whether it's the steak or whether it's that lovely dried prawn thing with chilli and salt that I love in the Chinese restaurant. And you know you're going to have that. You know you might have a glass of wine with it, and you know you get a little bit slightly tipsy, and you'll have a bit of a chat, and it'll be great, and just lovely, and people be waiting, and you okay, sir, would you like something else? Then you might go for dessert, you might go for a starter or dessert, or you might go for both. All those big decisions have to be made. And then there'll be music playing in the background. And it could be your man, Rich Zeig, with his version of Carly Simon's You've Got a Friend. Could be. Yeah. We go for dessert. We have dessert. Yeah, tiramisu. Tell you what, I'll have a double espresso as well, because I know I'm going to have a couple more pints and I don't want to be drifting off asleep when it comes to 11:30, because it's way past my bedtime. And that's sort of it, isn't it, really? And in the company of loved ones and friends and having the crack and eating food that you don't make at home. That's sort of a restaurant, isn't it? That's the experience that we're all missing. And among loads of other experiences. Thanks, Rich, on the guitar there. So that was Lynn's question. Now, sorry, drifted off there. Blueberries and vanilla yogurt blended into your batter, cooked on the pan with butter, topped with chopped bacon and maple syrup. Ooh! So savoury and sweet together, Carl. Controversial. Just found a recipe online for gin pancakes. You seem to do a lot of cooking at home. Jenny has it made. Jenny cooks as well. Not that I'm counting, but I think it works out half and half. Three meals each and then one takeaway. I think that's the way it works, usually that across an average week. All I heard you read out a text from someone who turns in whenever they can. Tunes in whenever they can. I listen every day, but never had a text of mine read out. I make pancakes all year round and put diced apple and pear in my batter and a pinch of cinnamon. Sounds delicious, Phil. And there you go, your text read out as well. I had the Richard Corrigan apple pancakes for brekkie this AM and they were delish. Recommended, says Sandra, on the way for a walk on sunny Merrion Strand. I forgot it was Pancake Tuesday. I already made a Kerry apple cake, so looking forward to that instead, says Kath. Nutter one, August Nutella. Hey, I love that. Nutella, yeah. When you're out, you're out. Yeah, that's probably sound like a mad night. Me and me one pint and me one glass of wine, then a couple of pints afterwards and a double espresso to keep me awake. That's the equivalent of some recreational drugs for me now, having a double espresso. Anyway, 51551 ray@rte.ie. And yeah, we'll do this. We're off air. Computer says no. We'll click the little microphone there just to talk you through it. And then we're on and click and click.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
I see there's pictures of tonight's homes from Home of the Year in the Daily Mail today. That's an odd promotion, isn't it? You buy one, get one free. I buy the Daily Mail every day. And I had two then on the kitchen counter. I didn't know what to do. Knock into the neighbour next door and say, do you want to copy the Daily Mail? So it's still there. I don't know what to do with it. Any ideas what I'll do with the copy of the Daily Mail? Anyway, what reminded me of the Daily Mail were those pictures. And I've seen the first episode of Home of the Year and it's well worth a watch. Three amazing houses. So that's on tonight on the telly. We got a lovely email overnight from Ollie Brennan, who lives in Drumcondra, and Ollie's on the line. How are you doing, Ollie?
How are you getting on, Ray?
Good. Thanks for dropping us an email. And it's a lovely, positive email, something good that has come out of the last 11 months. So you live in Drumcondra. Griffith Downs.
That's correct. Griffith Downs.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Now, tell us your story first before you get to the story of the WhatsApp group and all that. So how has the pandemic affected you personally?
Personally, yeah, well, I work in the hospitality industry, so I'm in over in Ballsbridge working in the Lansdowne Hotel at the moment. And on the 15th, or sorry, the 14th of March last year was my last day working in the bar. Everything closed down. So it was, I said, God, this is tough now. And Owen, my son, he finished up school the previous Thursday. So my wife Fiona, now Fiona's nursing, so she we had to help support her. So I said to Owen, God, we'll have to do something to keep ourselves busy. And Owen came up with a suggestion of this WhatsApp group.
Right.
And so we were out for a walk, yeah, and Owen just said, listen, he said, what about setting up a WhatsApp group and we could offer maybe a bit of help or something, you know, if somebody needs a hand with shopping or anything like that, you know, because you have a big range of ages in the estate here and a few elderly people and that, you know, so they may need, and there was a big fear, huge fear of, you know, going out and being told not to go out, and we didn't know what was ahead of us. Probably still don't, but at that time, you know, there was a lot of fear about the place. So I approached neighbours of mine, Phil Bowen and Eddie Reynolds, and I knew that Phil had several numbers of phone numbers of people in the estate through a neighbourhood watch. So I spoke to them on that Monday afternoon, and They were fully behind. God, this would be great, you know. So we got more and more contact numbers, and we set up our WhatsApp group.
Right.
Of which we have 64 in it now. 64 out of the 76 houses in the estate.
Now, prior to COVID, Ali, was there a residents association or anything?
No, well, there's an area residents association, but there wouldn't be anything kind of, you know, you'd be going about your day-to-day business in the estate. You know, yes, you would say hello to somebody from a distance or give them a wave or whatever. You may not know their name, or you may do know their name. I could say, from a personal point of view, I could safely say I knew maybe about 10 or 12 people's names on first-name terms.
Yeah.
And that was it. You know, otherwise you say good morning or whatever when you were out for your walk.
Okay. And then something magical happened. It's nearly like a script from a movie.
Yeah, listen, the reason I sent this into you is it's just from a personal point of view, and I know from talking to people here that something special has happened since this got going. And, you know, people have just pulled together. Like, when I sent out that initial offer, rather than people coming back to me saying, oh, God, yeah, I could do with a bit of help there with the shopping or whatever, all the messages coming back were people offering to help.
Right.
Everybody just wanted to help. They just wanted something to do to help each other out. And they were kind of crying out for something to do.
Yeah.
And, like, it's been a special, like, I know it's been a tough, tough time for everyone. Really tough time. And, you know, people have reacted in different ways. People, you know, there's a sense of fear still out there, and, you know, people are reacting differently to it. And all what's happened with this is help give people a bit of a lift in the evening times, be it through a quiz or throwing out the first line of a limerick out to them there and let them come back. That was great crack.
You threw out the first line of a limerick, and then
you threw out the first line of a limerick. Let's say there was a young lad called Ray,
right?
They'd come back with whatever, you know. I did ask them to keep it clean as well.
Yes,
but there was some good crack going on with that. And
there was a young lad called Ray who wanted to have his say.
Right.
He came from Kildare.
He had no hair.
There you go.
But there was all that sort of banter going on.
There was a lot of talk about his pay. There you go. I've finished there it off.
Are, there you are. I'm the spur of the moment.
But I'm looking at a list of things here, Ollie, that have been done in the little group of 76 houses since the start of lockdown. So something that was probably on everybody's mind and a lot of chatter about beforehand, finally done. Redeveloped the green.
Yes. Yeah, now the green, we've a fabulous green here, and but around the size, everything had been kind of over the years had become overgrown. Now I'm here 18 years, and gang of us went out now over a few weeks there back in April and that, and get out and start cutting back. And we found this old footpath that I had never seen. I'm here 18 years.
Right.
Never knew it existed. And through Trojan work from the residents here and a couple of people in particular, Jordan K. Barry, who are constantly out trimming and, you know, pruning and, you know, keeping things right. And we've turned the green into a place there now where the kids can go out. I'm looking out now and there's kids out playing football out there with their dog.
Brilliant.
And, you know, that's that sort of thing.
It hadn't happened.
It hadn't been happening.
And then I have this lovely scene, again, cinematic nearly, that April to September last year, you had twice weekly workouts. How did they work?
I tell you, what happened there was I have my next door neighbours here, the four young people, great young people living next door to me here from down the country, and they're all working well. Three of them are working in HSE and one is a Garda Síochána, and they came on board. I approached them and just said, listen, would you be interested? I know they do their own workouts and whatever. Would you be interested in doing something for the estate? And they said it would. So what would happen on a Wednesday night, they would come out into the middle of the road. We would come out to our gateways and they'd put on their bit of music and we'd do our workouts.
Brilliant.
And every age group was involved, from the tots to the elderly and that, you know. And it was great. And it was just a feel-good thing. And then the Wednesday night, it became twice weekly, and we went out on the Saturday night as well.
Right.
Now, after a while, the Saturday night one developed into a little glass of wine afterwards.
Right.
And a bit of music. But it was all done in accordance with
the regulations.
With the regulations that were going on. And that wonderful man I mentioned earlier, Eddie Reynolds, who I approached initially, Eddie is a fantastic musician himself and he has a great selection of tunes, so people would put in their request for the songs on a Friday, say, with Eddie, and he'd get it up on his computer, and it could be anything,
right,
say from ABBA to Mozart, you know. There's a bit of everything going
Brilliant.
On
and then you pooled your walk and kilometres. You did 5,000 kilometres.
We did, and funny enough now, you were doing a 5,000 run thing there, something, and that just triggered a little idea in our head. And I said, listen, people are getting out walking anyway.
Yeah.
And even to kind of push them a little bit more, to get out a bit more. So what I set them a target of 5,000 kilometres in the month of November. And the idea was that each week they would text me on a Sunday evening and tell me they've done 25 kilometres this week or they've done 40 or whatever figure they'd done. And I put it all together and I said on Sunday night then I would send out a message to say, right, we're at this stage now. And we smashed the 5,000. We did 6,800 or something like that between us.
Right. And just tell us about the atmosphere now, the change in the atmosphere from pre-pandemic to now.
Personally speaking, and I think I speak on behalf of the majority of the people here, is that it's changed. It's there's people are talking to each other. There's chats going on. There's a nice vibe. Don't get me wrong. Like, you know, it's a tough time. It's been a tough time for everybody, and but there's a positivity, and that was the thing I was trying to get across all along, was this positivity.
Yeah.
Just to see people out, gives me a great kick now going out and I see people out talking. And I know these people wouldn't have known each other beforehand.
Wow. It's brilliant. Griffith Downs Together, that's what you call
correct.
Yourselves.
Yeah.
Well, look, as I said, it was just sort of positivity bouncing off the page when we read that, well, the computer screen, because we hadn't printed it off at that stage.
But,
so thanks so much for sharing what's going on in your little community out there in North Dublin. Thanks so much, Ollie. Mind yourself. Oh, just before I let you go, Ollie. Just your wife, she's a nurse.
She is.
And how is she getting on?
She's grand, yeah. She's out in Kappa Orthopaedic Hospital, so she's not in the direct firing line, you know, of A&Es and that, you know. But at the same time, they've had their own problems as well, you know. So, like, it's tough on them all. It's very tough.
Yeah.
It's tough.
Yeah.
And, you know, full credit to everybody in the front line there, you know. They're doing fantastic work.
Just a
quick shout to my mother down in Gorey. I haven't been down since Christmas. I got down a flying visit. I haven't been down as often as I should, but we will when times are good again. And to my brother Phil and Elaine, Elaine's dad is going through a tough time at the moment down in Waterford, and just to wish him the best.
Okay.
George Harvey is his name.
Right, okay, we wish him the best from here as well.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Ollie. Mind yourself. See you. Bye, bye, bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
51551. Katrina has been on from Navan. When I was studying in France, the family I stayed with put a slice of ham and then a fried egg on top. Roll it up. Mightn't sound the May West, but it's delicious. And the ingredients are probably in every house. Season appropriately. Honey, maple syrup, etc. Continued success. Actually, can listen to the show this week. Oh, that's Katrina. Thank you, Katrina. So that's egg and rashers in a pancake. Mary says, Galileo, the most beautiful song I've ever heard, and I've heard many being in my 70s. It is a beautiful song, isn't it, Mary? No point giving up anything this Lent. We've given up enough already, says Orla. And pancakes with crispy bacon, toasted walnuts, goat cheese, rocket and maple syrup. Yum, 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 says Rachel. Pancakes with caster sugar and lemon and HP vanilla ice cream. And it is odd that I don't like pancakes. Or sorry, is it odd that I don't like pancakes? Same for popcorn. But then again, I like ham and pineapple pizzas. There's Gary musing away there. It's, you know, people don't like things. I can see why you mightn't like a pancake. And as for pineapple on pizzas, that's another day's debate completely. My Leaving Cert daughter, Alva, is on a well-earned break from her studies and made pancakes, served with crispy bacon, roasted baby tomatoes, raspberries, strawberries and grapes. A lot going on there. Of course, tomatoes, fruit, you know, tomatoes officially fruit, raspberries, fruit, all that. And then the crispy bacon. Yeah. Great to hear Ollie on the radio, keeping the Ballsbridge community going too with his fresh takeaway coffees at the Lansdowne Hotel. Everyone needs an Ollie, says Barry. I was just thinking there, the Lansdowne Hotel, the week prior to shutdown or lockdown last year, they would have been in the midst of, you know, home international. I'm sure that's one of their busiest times of the year. And then from that to nothing. Well, it's a busy time for flower growers all over the country because spring has definitely sprung. And there's a lot of flowers around. Darren McCullough, who you'll know from Ear to the Ground, is also a flower farmer, and he's on the line now. How are you doing, Dara?
Afternoon, Ray.
I hope you're there surrounded by daffodils, are you? Up to your knees in daffodils.
Surrounded, swimming in them, Ray. I'm actually in the house at the moment, but looking out the window at snowdrops. And, you know, people think when I tell them that I farm daffodils, they kind of have this image in their heads of me, you know, flouncing through fields full of golden daffodils. But of course, we pick them when they're still in a tight bud to maximize the vase life. So people are kind of sorely disappointed when they see the actual pictures.
So it's not Wordsworth at all. Your life isn't sort of a Wordsworth poem.
Not quite. No. Not quite poetry emotion, no.
Because I was thinking that because let's jump on very quickly to Amsterdam, which is the center, the hub of flower selling. Is it just for Europe or for the world?
Yeah, Amsterdam, 90% of the world's flowers are traded through the Dutch and mainly through Amsterdam. And it's been like that for decades, if not centuries. Even today, like I grow about 80 acres of daffodils, which is quite a bit of daffodils. Now, it doesn't make me the biggest daffodil farmer in Ireland or anything like that. There's about five serious commercial daffodil growers in the country. And we're
give
all
us
a kind
numbers,
of similar
give us
size.
Numbers on that, Dara, then. So how many daffodils would you be picking a day right now?
You're looking for the daffodilmatics, are you?
Yeah,
We pick, believe it or not, about 200,000 to maybe a quarter of a million stems a day. And they all have to be picked by hand, believe it or not, because there's no machine that will pick the stem and not cut off the leaf. And of course, we want to keep the leaf on the bulb because the leaf is the solar panel for the bulb. It's the one that creates all the energy and channels it down into the bulb. And we leave the bulb in the ground for a couple of years so that we can pick a flower from it in a couple of consecutive years. So I literally have about 25 people out in the field every day. I mean, today is gorgeous, but I can tell you some of the weather over the last week was horrendous and we were still out picking daffodils. Yeah. But we send them, you know, when you're picking quarter of a million flowers a day, you know, you sell as much as you can in Ireland, but we also export to the flower auctions in Holland. So I had a pallet of flowers auctioned there yesterday. And it's not that I'm, you know, on the other end of a phone at 5 a.m. when the auction is happening. This all happens when I'm getting my beauty sleep in bed.
Right.
And I just get up and look at an app on my phone in the morning and see what price my flowers made. So, and that's the way they trade internationally. And the flowers come from Colombia and Ecuador and Kenya and Italy and Holland and all over the place. And they all go through the Dutch auctions.
Okay, and is an Irish daffodil a sought after thing?
Well, it is at the moment. This year has been a great year to be a flower grower, whisper it. But a couple of planets have aligned themselves for us. Normally, a daffodil that I would sell wholesale at auction might be maybe 3 cents, maybe 3.5 cents a stem, which is not a lot, but this year they're making up on 6 and 7 cents a stem. Wow. What's driving that? Well, flower sales through supermarkets have gone through the roof, and most people buy their daffodils through supermarkets. So the demand is really high. There's a lot of a shortage of flowers out there as well, because it's one way that people have of reaching out to others at the moment and telling them that they love them or they're thinking of them or that they care for them. So, you know, online flower sales, flower deliveries, all that business is really booming.
Blooming. Hey, sorry. Hey, so I take it then that you have to, which you said at the start, you have to pick them really before they're in flower so you can transport them to Amsterdam to be sold on. So you have to time it perfectly. Is that it?
Yeah, it's fairly pressurized kind of a gig. I mean, I have the easy end of it. I yabber on phones all day long to buyers and sellers and try and organize stuff. But, you know, the pickers themselves out in the field, I mean, this is one of the things that really bugs me when people talk about unskilled labor in farming or in horticulture. I mean, yeah, the people out in the fields picking the flowers may not have PhDs, but they have a brilliant eye. I've got some videos up on Twitter and our Facebook and Instagram pages. And to see how fast they can judge a flower and pick it to the exact length that I need and judge it in terms of quality in the blink of an eye and be able to pick maybe 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 stems a day.
Right.
It's tough work. Yeah, I consider them like athletes, to be honest with you.
Now, thanks so much for sending me flowers. I didn't know you cared, Darren McCullough, but thank you so much.
Well, we all care, Ray. You know that.
And there's tulips in there. Are they grown in Ireland or where are those tulips?
Yeah, so we're doing a what we call a springtime charity bouquet at the moment in conjunction with Irish Cancer Society, and it's flying it. And all the flowers in the box are 100% Irish grown, and which is kind of unusual because, you know, 90%+ of the flowers sold in Ireland are imported, and because it's very difficult to produce flowers in Ireland, especially at this time of the year. But we're lucky. Obviously, we've a pretty good supply of daffodils. But up the road from me is a brilliant tulip grower. They're the Rurocs. They've been growing flowers for generations. They're Dutch originally, but nationalised, I suppose, at this stage. And they have just a fascinating process up there where they have tulip bulbs, crates and crates and stacks of tulip bulbs in fridges. And they sprout these bulbs in the fridges in water. So it's all hydroponically grown.
Right.
And then when they know that the moment they take those trays out of the fridge and put them into a glass house, 3 weeks later, they'll have a tulip to pick. So like you said, it's a very precise process. They're supplying maybe tens of thousands of tulips every day to Irish supermarkets and flower suppliers like myself. And they need to be able to program this, that they have enough flowers day in, day out, for the demands out there. And of course, incorporating also the peaks like Valentine's Day. I mean, we went bananas last week and, you know, people on the farm here are working until 12 o'clock at night trying to process orders because Valentine's gifts on the 15th weren't very popular. So there's a bit of pressure involved.
Yeah.
And then you have another peak in 4 weeks' time with Mother's Day.
Right. And of course, seasonal then. So what's seasonal for you for Mother's Day, for example?
Yeah, so for Mother's Day, at the moment, it's mainly tulips and daffodils that we've got coming. on the farm here, we'll be picking hopefully the first of our alliums, and then freesias and a few irises, and we've got things like camassia coming on, and they'll be all coming on the tunnels over the coming weeks, and they're all classic springtime flowers. Okay. Great for the pollinators as well. I should say that, you know, people love flowers, and you know, now during COVID, flowers are playing a really important role actually in keeping spirits up in people's lives and in their back gardens, and people are all mad into the gardening. But it's also brilliant for nature, for biodiversity. So, you know, a lot of these flowers, the snowdrops that I mentioned earlier, they're some of the first sources of pollen for our pollinators out there. So really important that we have all have flowers in our garden. So you're asking me, what are we going to be picking then? We're going to have those alliums coming out of the tunnels. What will be coming out of the fields after that then? We're talking about peonies when we go into kind of April, May, and then we're
followed
by...
What's a
peony? Peony roses. Oh my God, Ray.
Sorry.
Yes, you need to talk to the women in your life, obviously. People go crazy over peony roses. They are fragrant, which is quite unusual again in flowers. And this is, again, you kind of get into the anoraki stuff of flowers here with me. But the most flowers, because they're shipped all around the world, they're bred and grown for vase life. In other words, they can withstand the vagaries.
Not for scent.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
So they lose all that fragrance.
So you sacrifice the fragrance for the vase life.
Big time.
Right.
Big time.
Interesting. And didn't know that.
Some of the peonies that we grow just have gorgeous scents. And so, again, that's a real sign of kind of maybe the first flush of summer. And they come in these gorgeous pinks and really popular with brides and that.
Now, for most of us, Darren McCullough, we look out, like we have a few crocuses out the back and a few daffodils and some snowdrops. And they really brighten up my day and they bring joy to our lives. You have these fields and fields of various flowers. You must be like joyous on steroids, so to speak, with all the joy from flowers in your life. Or is it just a job for you?
Yeah, I have my moments, you know. It's actually quite a gratifying business to be involved in. I mean, I run a mixed farm here. We grow cereals. I'm involved with my neighbour in a dairy partnership. We have turkeys. We have Christmas trees. So we grow lots of different things, like a lot of Irish farms, you know, mixed enterprise. But, you know, you produce, you know, 100 ton of grain from your field. You don't have people ringing you up and going, oh my God, your grain's so wonderful and it's so gorgeous and thanks so much for producing it. Whereas with flowers, we get a lot of love and affection for them. Now, occasionally we get people who are not so happy with our flowers, and that happens. But it's a nice business to be involved in. I mean, it's a bit of pressure.
Finally,
you know, about 12 months ago, I first started doing online flowers, and I thought, you know, you could just shove flowers in a box and send them off to whoever orders them and they'd be happy. But then I realised, oh no, Dara, you need to include a message. It's all about the message, the love, the thoughts and all the rest of it. So there's a bit of pressure involved with the flower business.
Yeah.
And
as you said to me, talk to the women in your life, Dara. No, just a quick question from Frank before I leave you, because we've to get to Joan. Yeah. What's the earliest date of daffodil flowers? Is there a record?
We have about 20 different varieties of daffodils, which sounds like a lot. There's actually thousands out there, but our earliest daffodils would start coming in the first week in January.
There you go.
So we have them, they're specifically bred to do that. So we actually have a daffodil supply from the first week in January right up and beyond Easter.
Okay, Darren McCullough, we're going to be in your fields of daffodils next year to do an OB. When all this is over, I can't think of a nicer place to do an outside broadcast. Just to herald the arrival
Fantastic.
Of spring in 2022. Thanks, Dara. Mind yourself. See you. Bye. Bye.
You're
bye,
welcome.
Bye, bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Bought daffodils last week. They withered without blooming. Previous week, they were fine. Any suggestions? Cut a tiny bit off the bottoms as usual, Joan. Dara's gone, unfortunately. Now, I spotted an interview by Katie Byrne last week in The Independent with Joan Ryan from Gregnamana in County Kilkenny. And Joan and her husband, Pierce, have fostered 50 children since 1986. And I said, I'd love to talk to that woman, Joan, and she's on the line now. How are you doing, Joan?
I'm doing good, Ray. How are you?
Great. Gregnamana, lovely little village in County Kilkenny.
It is that, isn't it?
Yeah,
gorgeous.
It's scenic and it's on the River Barrow.
The River Barrow. Yeah.
And there's a lovely walk down there to St Mullins, isn't there? That's a lovely walk.
There is, yeah.
How are you finding the whole lockdown thing?
Not too bad. I miss seeing my grandchildren. I miss visiting them and they visiting me. I find that very, very difficult. I think that's the biggest part of it, Ray.
Yeah.
And I feel for the child that's in the house now. Well, she's not a child. She's a young adult. She's sitting the leaving cert this year, hopefully. And I find it hard on her.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that way to keep them motivated and to keep ourselves motivated. Yeah, it's tough enough.
And that 18-year-old you're talking about there is your last direct contact with fostering.
She is.
Yeah. So let's go back to the beginning then. So yourself and Piers had two children, Linda and Michael.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had an ocean, as they say.
I had an ocean, yeah. I got it into my head through another friend of mine about something I knew absolutely nothing about at the time, and to go into pre-adoptive fostering. And after some battling of the wills and talking it over and thinking we will do it, we won't do it, I wouldn't be able to give them back, one question after another, we decided in the end that, yeah, I would go for it, and that's what brought us on the road to fostering and on the road to the assessment and all of that. And yeah, here we are still today.
And what ages were Michael and Linda at the time, Jo?
Linda was 6 and Michael was about 8.5 at the time.
So still a bit of rearing in them.
Oh, there was.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, they still needed the mammy.
Yeah, yeah. So tell me about this pre-adoptive fostering then.
Pre-adoptive was back when, we'll say, you received the baby from hospital, straight away from hospital, and you held onto that baby and looked after that baby until such time as the decision was made either to take that baby back home or to have them adopted.
Okay. And who would have sort of spotted these babies?
We had, back then again, you had a hospital social worker who would have been in contact with the young women, and if they felt they needed the care, they would approach them, or it would be the other way around. The young women would approach the social worker and look for help, and they got the help and, you know, got the choice if you needed the time to see how it worked and how you could manage or if you couldn't manage. But, you know, you needed that time. Like, you couldn't just be making up your mind straight away the minute this baby arrived.
Okay.
And that's where I came in, and others like me then. We took on this baby and looked after this baby until such time as the decision
was made
final. Yeah.
So although it was called pre-adoptive fostering, sometimes the mother would decide to keep it, I'd imagine, would they?
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, they did.
Yes.
Yeah. And they'd visit the baby and all of that in our home. We left the home open. We welcomed everybody that wanted to come in, the family of the child, and made us available.
They'd visit you and they'd sort of... Can I have a go sort of thing? say about babies, can I hold the baby? It's just your baby, you can do whatever you like with, you know, well, you can do whatever you like.
Yeah, they came, they visited their babies. Not all of them now, Ray, but some of them did. And, you know, if, like, a lot of them didn't have any experience of babies or how to look after babies, like, which happens in a lot of homes. If all your siblings are grown up and all the rest of it, you haven't handled children and you don't know much about them. So if they needed help then with the basics, like the sterilizing of the bottles, the making of the bottles, the bathing of the child, the changing of the nappies, I helped them out.
Okay. The thing that fascinates me about people who foster, and particularly what you did, pre-adoptive fostering, is that inevitably you have to give the baby back.
Yes.
And what were the chats with you and Pierce around that side of it?
Well, to begin with, the chat was, when I approached the subject first, was, no, that won't work. You won't be able to give them back. And I said, oh, I will, yeah. I'll be able to give them back, all right. You know, the theory is always better than the practice, yeah. You know. And I said to him then, you know, sure, I'll have no choice. I'll be signing a contract like that. This baby is not mine and not ours, and we have to give it back and blah-de-blah. So anyway, it all went into motion, and the baby came, and the baby went, and Joan was disgraceful. I suppose to this day, I'll never forget it. I was desperate.
So this was the first baby. So, and I believe that you'd gone through the whole assessment process and you'd signed the thing and ever, and the next day you got a newborn baby.
I did.
Right.
The very next day, yeah. And
then a week later then.
Baby went back home.
Okay, talk us through what happened in the house that day.
Well, what went through in the house that day was my children went off to school, and I told them the evening before that the baby was going back, was going home. And when they got up from school the next day, before they went out to school, they kissed the baby goodbye, and we kind of just worked it from there. So I had to wait then until I got all the things together, wrote a bit of a note about, I was a bit of a stickler, you see, for routine with the baby, right, to get them on 4-hour feeds and all this crack, and packed up whatever little bits the baby had and waited for the social worker to come. And when I actually went to hand it over then, there was tears shed. And off she went. I suppose the poor social worker had to go as quick as she could. And that was it.
Well, when you say a tear, you're understating it, I would imagine.
I am, yeah. I was terribly upset.
Right.
I was so upset. But Ray, as time went on and every baby that we had and every baby that left, I was exactly the same. It never got any easier.
So that's a process you repeated close to 50 yeah. times.
Not 50 times, no. For the first 4 years, I had 14.
All right, and then you changed.
And then I changed to long term.
Uh-huh.
I changed right. and I didn't change. I changed to long term for one baby that was going to be going, the plan was for that child to go into long term foster care. And I just couldn't make sense of that. I thought, well, why is that happening? She's been here for 12 weeks now, and I think I can do that okay. And we loved her, and we wanted her, and so I applied. We applied then and said, you know, if we could be considered to take her on long-term.
Right, a long-term fostering, yeah.
Yes, yes. And we were granted that, and that's how that came about.
Right.
So for once, you had the sigh of relief. You weren't going to be waiting on the telegram or the phone call to say that they were coming to pick her up. But in between that, we didn't foster then. I think it was over 2 years, because your youngest child has to be at least 3 before you can take on another.
So because you'd fostered her and she was under 3, you couldn't foster somebody else. Is that it?
Yeah.
Yes, okay.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
But I did. As time went on then, we did.
You fostered 3 children then, long
yeah,
term.
Yeah, long term. Then we had 3 girls.
And
yeah.
The 18-year-old is still in the house, and the other 2 are gone.
This is still their home.
Yes,
They're only gone, Ray, because one of them got married.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, and like she was still coming home with the washing from college, and and the home comforts, and the second girl was the same. And then she went down to Australia and did a bit of travelling and came home, and she's actually down walking in Cork now at the moment.
Okay. And how did Michael and Linda deal with all of this? All of these, I suppose you could describe them as interlopers coming into their house, getting love and affection from their parents.
Yeah, you have to spread yourself a bit thin, all right, you know, to try and give them all what they deserve and what they need.
Yeah.
With the babies, they got used to that.
Yeah.
Then you see with the long term, they were okay with that as well because they were babies and they grew up with my children and my children, you know, they bonded.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they were regarded as sisters and brother, you know what I mean?
And were you taking any children in who were, you know, teenagers or older? No.
I took, I did a bit of respite as well. We did some respite and they would have been teenagers. But that respite then, Ray, comes in at, say, a week in the summer maybe, okay. A week. You'd befriend them as well. It's just not...
And when you say respite, is it respite for the parents or respite for the children or both?
Both.
Both, right, okay.
Both. It works both ways. They like it because it's a holiday and the children and the parents needed the break, especially in large families, you know?
Okay, and these would be identified by TUSLA or a social worker and as needing this.
Yes.
Yeah, I know you get, you know, a weekly allowance, which but I know in a lot of cases doesn't even cover the expenses. So there's an awful lot of selflessness and altruism in this. You've obviously searched your soul to answer this question, so hopefully you'll have a well-rehearsed answer. But why do you do it? Why do you do it?
I do it because I just loved doing it, and I just loved it, and I never once thought of stopping it, even if we had bad times or bad experiences. It never came into my head to not do it. It was part of our life, and that was what we did as a family, and that's. And I was passionate about it, really, and I never stopped. You know, you met the parents, you interacted with, you took on the whole package, Ray. You didn't just take on the child, you took on the parents, you took on, you might have met siblings of those children.
But the nature of those families is that there is baggage, there is probably dysfunction, there's dysfunction. And you're inviting that into your world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Asher, look at Ray. What can I say?
At
the end of the day, what are you giving? Apart from the love and the care that you're giving the children, you're giving your time.
Yeah.
And, you know, what does that cost you? Nothing.
Well, here's the thing. I'll finish up because we have to go to Noakt, but it's funny you say that because I'm reading Dr. Edith Eger's new book.
Yeah.
And she is the woman, Holocaust survivor. She had that brilliant book called The Choice. She has
a
new book called 12 Gifts. Anyway, in what I was reading last night, and I underlined it, she said, love is a four-letter word spelt T-I-M-E.
Yeah.
There you go.
That's, so I'm not too wrong.
You're not. Well, she's a qualified and she's been on the planet 92 years and she's been through hell and back and she's a wise woman.
Yeah.
So that's it exactly. That's fostering. Yeah.
Well, foster children can be through to hell and back too and make great lives for themselves and us as foster carers, that's what we're there for, to encourage that, to make a good life for yourself and to be... You know, be proud of yourself.
Joan Ryan in Gregnamana, I want to have a longer chat with you, but face to face. So when we get to the other side of this, you're on the list of people to bring into studio if you'll come up from Gregnamana to say hello to us.
Thank you, Ray.
We're okay. Mind yourself, Joan.
And you too.
Okay. Talk to you.
Bye. Bye.
Anish Tosh, now in the Freescalton in Oak, Le Mora de Wallish. Good morning. Thank you very much. 51551 Ray at RTE.ie. Let's see what you're saying there about various things that we talked about in the first hour. Have run past Dara's fields of flowers a few times. They really are a wonderful sight, says Paul. How are you doing, Paul? And my aunt still fosters at 67 years of age. She has been doing it for over 40 years and has been widowed for 30 years of that. She has two lovely young ladies living with her now, and it's lovely to see the children of the past who still visit and ring her. Isn't that lovely? Just listening there to the subject of fostering, myself and my husband fostered for years, and people asked how you did it, having to hand back children. I never knew myself until our last child that we got to adopt. And the day that the adoption went through and we breathed relief and let all our emotions and feelings come flooding through because he was now ours. All the feelings we obviously held back as a kind of protective skin while we handed back children, says Brenda. And I'm here with my family in Houston, Texas, after the coldest day in 125 years. Wow. We have epic snow, ice and temperatures down to minus 20 degrees last night. Our power has been out, as well as 4 million other Texans. I'm tending to the fire, though. The coffee is made and we are enjoying some Radio 1 as we listen to your pancake ideas for tonight. We will not be cancelling Pancake Tuesday and looking forward to our feed later today. My daughter's name is Darcy and she thinks it's funny someone called her her name is on the radio. I am from Limerick and I've been living here for 15 years in Houston in Texas and we have never seen weather like this. Thanks for the company. That's Pamela Carney, who has a Darcy. A spring has definitely sprung, Ray. Last night driving home in the rain, I saw 7 frogs crossing the road, all different locations. Why did the frog cross the road? I don't know. To get to the other side, to get to the book, Reddit. There's some joke there somewhere. Speaking of jokes, Pat Richardson brightened up our Friday last week with his centipede joke that somebody had put up on a WhatsApp group or an Instagram somewhere. And we played it twice and it was very funny, very funny. And on the same day, comedian Colm Regan had thrown down the gauntlet to RTE to get some funny stuff on the telly and on the radio. And then I was reading yesterday in The Guardian that the BBC are having a festival of funny and their head of comedy, can't remember his name, has said, people need this now. So across all their platforms, on television, digital and on radio, they have comedy. And I see Tommy Tiernan's involved in some of that. So they're doing that over there. So we're doing our own little bit. We're doing our own little bit. It's sort of half formed at the moment, maybe fully formed. But we're going to be looking for, wait for it. And I'm saying this tentatively because I'm not a big fan of jokes on the radio. They can fall very flat. But we're in, you know, uncharted territory, unprecedented times. Not something we do normally, but we're going to be launching this week or early next week our competition to find Ireland's funniest joke. I've said it there. It has to happen. Ireland's funniest joke. It's out there. It's out there in the public domain. So it has to happen now. So we're going to be inviting you to record a joke onto what's it called? WhatsApp voicemail and send it in to us and then we'll go through them. We'll all go through them and we'll pick out them and we'll play them and there'll be a prize and we'll, anyway, details of that to come. So we're on the search for Ireland's funniest joke. And I know. Why would you invite that onto yourself? But anyway, we're going to be doing it. Right, press that button up there. Here we go, yeah. It's time for our quiz of today. Today being the 16th of February, and we've cobbled together 10 questions on events that happened on this day over the years, and we have a prize. Our prize this week comes from the I Knew A Collection. Each day this week, a lucky listener will win a 2-night break with dinner in any of their 4-star hotels, and they have them all over the place, Kilkenny, Dundalk, Tullamore, Monaghan, Athlone, Cork, Limerick and Sligo. You can find out more and maybe book a summer break. Inua.ie, I-N-U-A. On the line we have Aidan Keenahan from Ballyfin in County Laois. How are you doing, Aidan?
Hi Ray, how are you?
Not too bad. Ballyfin College, does that still exist?
It's a very exclusive hotel at the moment.
Oh yes, it's Ireland's only 6-star hotel, isn't it? Isn't that it?
Apparently, yeah.
Yeah, apparently. Have you ever been in it?
I was in it for a meal once, all right, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
And you're still paying for it. No, that's not that's a joke. That's a joke. A very bad joke. You've finished a day of online learning, have you?
I am.
Or teaching? Teaching or learning?
Teaching.
Teaching, right, okay.
Yeah.
What are you, primary or secondary?
Primary.
Okay. And is it a big school or a small school?
Oh, we're very small. We only have 37 pupils.
All right. So you cover a number of classes then, do you?
Yeah, I have 3rd, 4th, 5th and 6th.
That must be difficult over Zoom, is it?
Yeah. Well, I have them split to between 3rd and 4th and 5th and 6th because you can't do it all at once, no.
Yeah. How are they getting on, do you think?
Yeah, they're doing great. Great engagement and great support from their parents. It's not easy on anybody, but they're doing a great job, yeah.
Yeah,
and well done to them.
Your wife's a teacher too?
She is. She's on midterm now at the moment, which is great. So that makes a bit of a difference.
And what age are your 2 children?
They are 1 and 2.
Ah, right. No homeschooling there.
No.
Oisín and Tiernan.
That's right.
How are you finding fatherhood?
Oh yeah, best thing I ever did.
Is it?
Yeah. Now when I get a sleepless night, I don't know if I...
Yeah, I know.
In the grand scheme of things.
It's the best thing you've ever done. All right, that's right. And in quick succession.
Yeah. Asher, you know when you're doing it, you may as well do it quickly.
That's a real man thing to say. Listen, you're up against Sean O'Neill, who's in Rooski in County Roscommon. How are you doing, Sean?
How are you, Ray? I'm actually a couple of miles outside of Rooski. I'm in the middle of nowhere.
Oh, right, okay. Say hello to Aidan there.
How are you, Aidan? Listen, I won't enter, but what do you get if you cross a kangaroo with an elephant?
I don't know. Go on.
You get big holes all over Africa.
Or Australia. Anyway. It depends on where you know. Anyway. So are you on the Shannon?
I am. I'm looking at Loughborough Finn. I'm looking at Dromond across the lake.
Right. Okay.
And the sun is shining and you can see the reeds clearly and it's beautiful.
It's beautiful, right. And what's your story? Are you working from home or retired?
What's my story? Well, I told you as such, I'm very, very old. I retired a few years back. I did a master's in songwriting in UL and now I'm writing a bit and trying to teach myself.
You did a master's in what?
In songwriting.
Songwriting?
At the Academy of Music and Dance, which one of your... Carl Cochran would have been, was the course director, still is.
Right, you know, okay. Line, and I presume you've written songs then?
Oh, I've written songs and I've sold a bunch of CDs. And this is my lucky day getting on to you because I just got my royalty statement from Imro. I got €2.89 for the last 4 months, you know, so... It's my lucky day today.
So say for example, Sean, if I played one of your songs on you know, mid-afternoon radio on RTÉ Radio 1, what does that mean in monetary terms to you?
Well, I it depends. I believe it's gone down. Now, I haven't been played. I mean, John Creedence played me, Alf McCarthy played me on Late Day, and it was worth a lot more than I thought. It was about £25.
Oh, was it? For one play?
I think it's about half that, but I'm not sure because I haven't played on the radio for a while.
I'll email you
in a song. Now you probably won't play it because it's home recorded. I can't get into a studio, but it's a brand new song about rainbows and gold.
Right.
You're welcome to stick it up on your
Okay. You've been baking for 30 years.
I've been what?
Have you been baking? No. It says baking.
Baking for 30 years. No, I've been baking a lot lately. Now, about 30 odd years ago, I made a baked cheesecake and really enjoyed it. But it cost an arm and a leg to make, so I didn't make it again until last July. So Tesco had, I'm sorry for mentioning it, a branded cream cheese half price. So I made one for my birthday.
Ah, right.
And then I just watched them whenever the shop had it half price, I'd make another one. You know, so they got including that's a big New York cheesecake. And then another one was a burnt Basque cheesecake, which is really burnt on the outside, but really.
I think I've had one of those. Yeah, right. Yeah.
You've had one, okay.
Yeah,
I haven't had one like mine.
Right. Anyway. So it's Sean O'Neill somewhere near Rooski in County Roscommon, looking out over a lake to Drummond with reeds, and Aidan Keenan in Ballyfin in County Leash. Good luck to you both. Here we go.
Thank you.
Okay, so Aidan, first question for you. On this day in 1945, Venezuela declared war on Nazi Germany. On what continent would you find Venezuela?
South America.
Correct answer. Sean, on this day in 1966, France performed an underground nuclear test at Eker in Algeria. On what continent would you find Algeria?
Africa.
Yeah, they're introductory offer type questions. Aidan, second question for you. Have a listen to this. On this day in 1964, Christopher Eccleston, English actor, was born in Salford. He was the 9th actor to play the iconic part in that TV show. Can you name the TV show?
Is it Doctor Who?
It is Doctor Who, yes. Sean, an audio one for you as well. Have a listen to this.
What'd you say to Pants? No words were spoken, none of consequence.
You're a liar. You're a damn liar. I saw you talking with him. Tell me.
Cannot speak of what did not occur.
Okay, on this day in 2014 at the 67th BAFTAs, that Irish-German actor you heard there was nominated for a Best Actor Award for his role in 12 Years a Slave. Can you name him?
I knew the Doctor Who one. Okay. Saw the first episode, but it's on the tip of my tongue and I'm going to kick myself, but no.
No. Michael Fassbender. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, you knew that. Okay, Aidan, question number three for you. On this day in 1899, KR, Iceland's first soccer club, was founded. What we want to know is the capital city of Iceland.
Reykjavik.
Is the correct answer. Sean, similar question for you. On this day in 1909, Serbia mobilised against Austria-Hungary. What is the capital city of Serbia?
Nope, pass.
Yeah, you see.
Not my lucky day.
I bet you knew Reykjavik. I bet you knew.
I did.
Yeah, it's Belgrade. It's Belgrade. Okay. Right, Aidan, have a listen to this. On this day, 1961, Andy Taylor, guitarist with that group, was born in England. Can you name the group?
I think it's Duran Duran.
It is Duran Duran. Before your time, but correct answer. Now, wait till we see. So you're on four. Sean, you're on one with two questions to go. You can't catch him.
Oh, right. Okay. What did Larry used to say? They didn't suit you.
They didn't suit you on the day. Do you want to answer? Do you want to see if you can answer the next one anyway? Just, yeah. Well, here we go.
Yeah,
we'll play this. Yeah, here we go.
Wherever you are, I believe that.
So that song was number one in 1998, Sean. Can you name the singer?
It's not Enya.
No.
not my style either. God, who was it?
It's Celine Dion.
Celine Dion. Yeah. I wouldn't have got that.
You didn't get the rub of the green today at all.
I didn't know. He got all my questions.
Yeah, he did.
Anyway, look, enjoy the break, Aidan. Okay. My grandkids are. Well, I haven't got great grandkids yet, but they would be older than yours if I had. All right, listen, thanks very much. Look, I'll send that off to you.
Will you? Please do, Sean. No, and mind yourself and enjoy the view there.
Too.
Thanks, Sean.
Okay.
That's Sean O'Neill there. And Aidan Keenahan, you and the person of your choice, assume your wife, can choose from the iNUA collection, iNUA.ie. You can book a summer break in any one of their numerous hotels all over the country. Okay?
Thanks a million, mate.
Right, Aidan, mind yourself.
Thank you. Take care. Bye.
Email ray at rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, we were speaking to Joan Ryan before 4 o'clock about fostering, and we ran out of time there, so I forgot to give you the details there. If you're interested in fostering, there's a website called fostering.ie, or there's a free phone number, 1800-226-771, or you can email tusla.fostering@tusla.ie. And as you can hear from Joan, if it suits you, it's a very rewarding thing to do. Now, Pancake Juice is here to give us all a lift. And it's time to get your batter mixed and your pan ready. Chef Kevin Dundon joins us from his kitchen down in Dunbrody. How are you doing, Kevin?
Very good, Ray. Happy Pancake Tuesday.
It sounds like you're in your kitchen, are you?
I am in my kitchen. Yes, indeed, I am.
Right, okay.
I've been rustling up pancakes, especially for you. So.
No, you're very good. It's a pity we can't eat the feckin' thing.
I know, yeah. Anyway, I can, though.
Are you a flipper?
I am a flipper, but I've got a couple of different types of pancakes. One of these pancakes we will flip.
Yes.
The other pancakes we won't flip because it's a fluffy pancake stack.
Right.
Yeah, so actually on our family WhatsApp group today, we have a flipping competition going on.
Right. I just think I'd be fearful that it wouldn't be successful. Then that's a waste of batter then if it's not successful.
Well, no, there is a trick to it. So once you turn your pancake first and move it around, make sure it's moving around the pan, and then it's easy enough to flip. It's when you don't flip it. If you try and flip it the first time before you actually turn it, it will stick to the pan.
I see. So you have to actually flip it over with a spatula or whatever first, and then
exactly.
flip it. But then you're flipping it back to the thing that's already cooked. So then you flip it again, do you?
Yeah, but it's get the whole family involved.
Really. Right, okay.
And it's a bit of a laugh.
It is a bit of a laugh. Flipping. What's your favourite topping?
Well, I'm a real traditionalist. I love a thin pancake with just lemon juice and caster sugar.
Right, you are.
To me, that is the ultimate. Yeah. But, you know, there's all sorts of pancakes. Like, I mean, you can, I have a recipe there on the page with salted caramel and chocolate sauce over thick American-style pancakes.
Right.
Which are a fabulous pancake, and they're really, really easy to cook. And the only difference, really, Ray, is that the recipe is plain flour, baking powder is the secret, eggs, buttermilk, and you beat that up, and it's quite thick. So kind of, it's like it looks like a drop scone.
Yes, you know, they're chunkier.
Yeah. Yes, but yeah. Basically, when you cook them on a low heat, and they'll kind of souffle up, so they'll get quite thick. Then you turn them over. And you stack them, so you kind of, the American style ones, so you kind of get like four on top of each other.
And then you drizzle them with maple syrup or whatever, yeah.
Maple syrup, salted caramel and chocolate. Beautiful.
Okay, delicious. Now, before we get all fancy and all that, let's stay with the traditional, you know, batter and all that. What are the mistakes that people make? Because there'll be people making pancakes for the first time this evening. So what mistakes do people make?
Well, first of all, your pan needs to be warm. So you need to have a good nonstick pan.
Right.
Okay. You put that on the heat and a dry pan, put it on the heat until it gets warm. And then if you get a tissue paper and put a little bit of vegetable oil in your tissue paper and kind of rub the pan.
Right.
So you're not pouring oil into the pan. So you're just putting a thin coating of oil on the pan.
What about butter? Would you not rub with butter? No, that's what I rub mine.
I put butter on in the end.
Oh, the end. Right.
Yeah.
Okay,
if you put butter on, if the pan gets too hot, the bottle will burn.
Okay, fine, okay, okay.
So then you put two ladles of batter in, and the secret with your batter, and the recipe is there, but if you coat the back of a spoon, so if you get like a dessert spoon, it should literally coat slightly thicker than double cream, and it should just coat the back of the spoon, put two ladles into your pan, swirl it around, so make sure you've got the whole pan coated. Then put it back on the heat, and just make sure that you just watch it, don't touch it, watch it, and the edge of the pancake will start to peel away from the pan. And that's your indication that it's time to turn your pancake.
Uh-huh. See, that's what people do. It's premature turning, isn't it? That's what happens.
That's exactly what happens.
And then the batter goes all over the place. Yeah.
And then it'll break. And normally the first pancake you'll make anyways, right, will break.
Oh, but that's good news for people. So don't get despondent then if you're first, you, a professional chef. You sometimes spoil your first.
That's the chef's treat. So you eat that one.
Right, okay.
Once you get your second and third and fourth pancake, you'll be a dab handle. It's like really easy.
Okay.
And then when it comes off the pan, you just want to put a little bit of knob of butter onto the pancake and kind of just rub it over the pancake. You get kind of that lovely creamy butter flavor on it. Uh-huh. And I just sprinkle that with caster sugar and icing. Lemon over the top and roll it and eat it.
Okay.
And like that's brings me back to when I was like 6 and 7, mum making the pancakes.
Yeah, my dad did it, and that's we couldn't afford fresh lemons in our house. We were very poor.
No, what do you call that squeezy stuff? The yellow plastic bottle.
Jif, was it? No, not Jif.
Not Jif. Hopefully,
Jif. It was Jif lemon. It was Jif lemon. Yeah,
Jif lemon.
Yeah. That's what it was. Then you could wash the dishes with it afterwards.
Yeah.
But anyway, so for people, that's for first timers, right? Now, for people who have been making pancakes all their lives and they want something a little bit different.
Yeah.
Do I see you doing some sort of souffle Japanese style pancake? Is that what you're doing?
Yeah, so on my Instagram today, I was doing Japanese. I was in Japan last year for the World Cup and I came across these. And basically what they are, it's a different type of pancake. And it's similar to the American pancake, except that you fold in the egg whites. So you whip up the egg whites and fold it into your batter.
Right.
And then you put it into your pan and it literally rises like a souffle. And turn it over. They're absolutely delicious. They're really, really light and really easy to eat. So that's kind of... And what would be really nice to do is that when you put it into the pan, because it takes about 4 minutes on one side and you flip it over on a low heat, but if you put in like a chocolate into the center of the pancake, and then when you break through the souffle, the chocolate will run out.
Oh, so that's kind of like, you see, that's now you're getting fancy there. You're getting fancy.
But you asked me to.
It's a souffle Japanese pancake with chocolate in the middle. That sounds delicious. Okay, the other one, go on.
And the other one is this one is really easy, and this one is a great first timer, and that's the fluffy pancake stack, and that's the American style pancake.
Yeah.
So, and that's got the baking powder in there, right? And you kind of put three pancakes in your pan, so they're about 4 inches in
diameter.
Width.
Yeah.
And then you cook them, and the kind of, when you put them into the pan, right, this is a great tip, is that you'll see bubbles appearing into the batter, like holes, like crumpets. Do you remember crumpets?
Yes.
And then you flip, once you see those holes, flip them over and cook them for another 2 minutes.
Okay.
Take them out, stack them up, and then like you can either do a lovely berry fruit compote over top, or else what I was saying is the salted caramel and chocolate sauce. They're delicious. They're a little bit more filling, and which is good, but I would still go back to
what about savoury ones now? Come on, have you got any ideas for savoury ones? Because if you want
savoury one is great, and people kind of forget about doing savoury pancakes. They were kind of huge in the '80s, seafood pancakes and stuff like that. But the one I've got for you is a chicken and bacon and mushroom pancake. So basically, you'd make your sauce in the pan. So that's like putting your butter, your onions, your mushrooms, chunks of chicken and bacon into your saucepan. Cook that for about 3 to 4 minutes. Add a little bit of flour and a little bit of vegetable stock and cream. So you're making this creamy sauce.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And then use your normal pancakes, the thin pancakes.
Yeah.
And then put them flat on the table. Put a little bit of your sauce inside. Roll it. Put it into a casserole dish and then kind of line them up. A bit like cannelloni. Line them up in a dish, and then the remainder sauce poured over top, and then some vintage cheddar over top of that.
And how long do you leave that in the oven for?
About 25 minutes at 180 degrees, and it's really, really tasty, delicious. But you've got all that creamy, mushroomy chicken bacon sauce with the pancakes, which is nice. And then, of course, do your pancakes for dessert. The other one is like just your classic bacon and cheese in between a buckwheat savoury pancake. So instead of using regular flour, you can use buckwheat flour,
right,
a bit more healthier, and fill that with your bacon and cheese. Bake that in the oven. That's kind of a really French way of
delicious.
Doing it.
That's delicious as well.
God. Oh, yeah.
I'm salivating here, Kevin Dunham.
I know,
and all of those.
I've eaten them all today, Ray. Sorry.
We put them up and your Instagram is instagram.com/Kevin Dunham, where you can see Kevin making the Japanese souffle pancakes. Enjoy the rest of the evening with your family, Kevin, and we'll talk to you the other side. Yeah, you might cook for us the other side of this. Thanks, 100%. Kevin. That's it from us. Whatever you're doing, do it safely and enjoy your pancakes. We're back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. On the way, we have Cormac and Sarah. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 3. Where are we here?
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.